then you won't remember it now. But I met you with some friends. There was lightning in the sky. I tried to make a joke about angels in a disco. I got tongue-tied and you all got fed up. Change one, change you. Change one, change in town, working at the drugstore. Did you get the city blues? Oh, that I can relate to. Oh, I can see it now, me telling you how I found my way back home.
That we could be in the studio together, but obviously the times we're in at the moment, we are practicing self-isolation. So I'm speaking down the line from a regional part of Australia with Jeremy Lachlan. Now, Jeremy is the author of the Jane Doe Chronicles. Book one, The Cradle of All Worlds, hurled readers into the manor, a labyrinthine series of mystical death traps. And on the way, it won the 2019 Australian Book Industry Award for Older Children. Now, the Jane Doe Chronicles begins somewhere in the faraway somewhere land of Blue Haven. Jane lives a thankless life, caring for her father and avoiding the entire township who believe that she's cursed. When Jane narrowly escapes ritual sacrifice to appease the mythical manor, she must plunge headlong into it to rescue her father. Guided only by the mysterious visions of the reclusive Winifred, Jane soon discovers she's not alone. We're now into book two of the Jane Doe Chronicles, The Key of All Souls. Jane has discovered so much more about her life, the evil Roth, and the many worlds accessible through the manor. Jeremy, this is two fantastic books, and it is too long that I have waited to present them to people. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much, and thanks for that great introduction. As most authors can attest to, we hate writing synopses, and that was just such a beautiful one that you read out then. Thank you for that.
Oh, look, I'm more than happy. It's I've had a really great time reading the two books in, I guess, this time in our lives, in what we're now starting to sort of see as history unfolding. They are a beautiful way to escape to these fantastic worlds, but also a little bit of a rumination on who we are. There is definitely some fantastic stuff in there that I want to share with the readers. So,
thank you so much. And I think escapism is often underrated in literature. It's often genre-based fiction is often kind of brushed aside as fairy floss or popcorn entertainment or something. But there's often so much to be found within that, and the ability to escape into different worlds, especially when the real world around you is kind of feels like it's crumbling and closing in. It's such a powerful force.
And I mean, this might be a time to let listeners know that Jane is 14 years old. This is what would be termed YA, young adult fiction. But you are a fully functioning adult type person, as I am.
And trying to be.
We love this sort of stuff. So I mean, if you're listening and thinking maybe I'll get that for a younger person in my life, really carefully read it so you don't crack the spine first, because they're fantastic books.
Oh, thank you. And I think that So I wrote it as a crossover book. So some people call it middle grade, some people call it YA. I kind of wrote it for everybody, kids, teens, and adults. And it's been really wonderful since the book came out. I've heard from kids, their parents, teens, adults. A lot of people have been embracing Jane and her friends.
So let's start there then, because this is book two. This is the best time to start, because as soon as you finish book one, you know you've got another one to pick up if you were, say, in a position where you had a lot of reading time. What do you want readers, both new and experienced, to know about Jane as we sort of enter the Key of All Souls?
Well, I think Jane is, I love Jane. There's a lot of me within her. I guess you could say all the characters, they obviously all come from me. I think my personality splintered across them all. Except for Roth, hopefully the main villain.
I was about to say I have some questions then.
Jane is she's a very brave girl. She's had a very difficult life, and then one day that life is made even more difficult. Her life that's already kind of upside down is kind of turned upside downer, and she has to kind of rally to save the one thing she cares about more than anything, which is her dad. That aspect is very close to my heart, because I actually started writing the series when my dad was ill with a very rare form of cancer. So the book starts in Cradle of All Worlds, book one. Jane is a carer for him living in the basement. And when I started writing that, I was a carer for my dad, not living in a basement, thankfully, but being a carer for my dad out with my mum out in Griffith in country New South Wales. So it's very much tied up. That relationship, I drew a lot from Jane's relationship with her dad and the relationship that I had with my dad during that time. It is a journey of self-discovery that Jane goes along, as well as a journey to save her dad and the other worlds. Book one ends on a massive cliffhanger, which a lot of people were kind of frustrated at me about. But now, going into book two, it is a duology, so it's one adventure split over two books, so there is a climax, and Jane's story is going to get some sense of conclusion at the end of book two.
You do this really interesting thing across the two books where, as a protagonist, I guess we understand Jane to be extraordinary, but across both of the books, what's really emphasized is her ordinariness compared to the other characters, and she's constantly looking at companions on her adventures like Violet, like Hickory, as one has lived this incredibly thousands of years long life, the other is just this incredible sort of superstar trained in every martial arts kind of assassin. And Jane is constantly thinking about her ordinariness amongst these adventures where she's doing extraordinary things.
Yeah, I mean, nobody likes an absolutely perfect hero. I think the main thing you can do for each of your characters is to make them human. That means giving them faults. If your main character can do absolutely everything, then there's no real reason for them to have a big, dangerous quest in the first place. I wanted to make Jane as human and as grounded as possible. But at the same time, I didn't want her to be the kind of stereotypical kick-ass female action hero where she's absolutely brilliant at everything. Jane is brave, but she is a little bit hopeless at times. She's not the brightest girl. She's lived in a basement all her life on Blue Haven. She's been denied a proper education, so she's not that bright. But she does have a kind of this courageous drive and this connection to her father that she'll risk absolutely anything to get him back. So I had a lot of fun with that throughout it as well. Jane constantly finds herself into the manor, which is this very dangerous place where you could walk into one room and find a booby trap around every corner. And she's constantly in over her head, but she's a scrambler. Like she'll never stop trying to get what she wants and save the people she loves.
Yeah. Now your bio actually tells us that the idea for Jane Doe, and I'm thinking also the manor, came to you while lost in a Cairo museum. Can you tell us a bit about that experience and the inspiration you drew from it?
Yeah, so I've always loved getting lost in museums and forests and caves and things like that, because for me, that's when the kind of what-if questions arise. What if I took a different turn? What if this painting came alive? What if a velociraptor was chasing me through here? I've always been obsessed with dinosaurs. When I was in Egypt, I got lost from separated from my group. And just started wandering around. And it's this big old building with just so many statues and ornaments and, you know, Shabti figures, all of that around the place. And I just started to think, what if there was an infinite labyrinth between worlds? Mm. What if it was known to an entire island full of people? What if they'd used it for thousands of years to journey through to these other worlds and return with tales to tell? But what if one day it stopped letting them inside? And what if it was all because of a child? And so that was the kind of the seed that planted the idea for this story. That was in January 2007. So I spent the last kind of 13 years, is that my maths right there? 12, 13 years working on these two books, this one big adventure. And I just decided I wanted to just fill it with all of my favorite things, all the kind of iconic tropes that I've loved throughout my life, like rope bridges and shifting rooms and runaway trains, carnivorous forests, all the booby traps I can imagine.
I noticed a distinct absence of gift shop cafes with overpriced coffee, though. Not that
maybe
type
that's going to come in book three. Who knows?
Book three. Jane Doe. Sorry, I've just laughed so hard I've accidentally kicked my seat and dropped myself about half a foot.
Well, now, if you can't laugh at your own jokes, there's something wrong in the world.
Absolutely. Now, the characters are really the heart of your stories, and look, I have so much to ask about them. But why don't I start with the balance, I guess, between building character and high stakes action? Because if it hasn't become apparent, dear listener, these are, you know, there are a series of action scenes in both books that are just page by page turner. How do you go about showing us the real person, the person you want us to get to know, during a horse riding knife fight?
it's a great question. I think part of it comes from the book is written in first person present tense, so we are in Jane's head for the entirety of the adventure, except for the occasional kind of interlude where we jump to a third person narrator. But I think that really helps keep the action grounded. It can be difficult at the same time because it means that because I'm constantly in Jane's head, I can't explore other things that are happening in an action scene. It's all through Jane's eyes. It's kind of embracing that notion that we feel things as Jane feels them. We see things as Jane sees them.
We're deceived as Jane's deceived.
Yeah, absolutely. And kind of embracing that notion that Jane is lied to several times throughout the novel. And leading the reader through that, not just the labyrinth of the manor, but the labyrinth of the story that Jane is told. It does kind of hit some beats similar to like a crime novel almost as she tries to unravel the mysteries. But in regarding the action sequences, I had these major set pieces that I wanted to do. As I said, I just wanted to fill it with all my favourite things. And I remember I kind of wrote them on pieces of paper and pieced them on the wall. So I had these big set pieces, almost like an action-adventure movie that I wanted to show throughout the books. But then it is about making them human. So making sure that in each action sequence, the characters learn something new about the mystery, about their past, or about themselves. To further it, not just geographically throughout the story, but emotionally as well. It was really important to keep it grounded.
I'm thinking about a particular character right now, and I'm not going to talk about who this character is because it's a bit of a spoiler for the action in point two. But this character can't easily communicate with Jane, and so a lot of what we learn about this character comes from the character's actions. Is there something of that in what you're talking about, like the way action and the way it's displayed is actually a really good way of building story and also building character?
Absolutely. I mean, the great thing about a lack of communication is that it can create so much tension because things can, of course, be misconstrued and all of that. So I did have moments where I felt like I was banging my head against the wall. Like, how do I get these characters to communicate with each other? But it was kind of embracing the fact that communication isn't always easily when you're traveling to these different worlds. Because I didn't want to make it that in a lot of stories where you go to different worlds and conveniently everybody speaks English. The terms like English doesn't even exist in my world. It was kind of embracing that, and of course that does influence character, because for someone like Jane, who often, I mean, she's quite comedic throughout it, I wanted to make this a fun read, and in those heavier moments where I felt it getting a little bit too, just a bit cliched or too kind of overly dramatic, realising that Jane often takes the flip side and sees the funny side to something, or will try and get herself out of an awkward social situation in a comedic way. So it definitely helps characters in that regard.
Now, thematically, you have your many and varied characters explore the ways we deal with loss. Roth is your sort of purely evil villain. Elsa is a character who sort of hits us by surprise and takes a major role in The Key of All Souls. And Hickory is a strange sort of thousands of years old but sort of teenaged-looking character. But they each... they run the gamut of character traits, but they also each have to deal with the aftermath of loss, losing someone incredibly dear to them, how they respond, how it drives them forward, are key motivators in the action. What did you want to portray here?
Well, I mean, thank you so much for saying that. I'm so glad you picked up on that, because that was really, particularly in book two, The Key of All Souls, that was kind of a moment that really... When I made that discovery that for myself that so much of it was about grief and loss, or looking down the barrel of losing someone that you love dearly, that kind of unlocked everything for me. You know, you always, as an author, you're always wanting those moments where it's all there. You've laid the tracks, but you haven't actually stepped back and realised it yourself yet. Mm. Roth for me is I love him as a villain. He actually came to me in a nightmare years before I even came up with the idea for the Manor and the Cradle of All Worlds. And it was like, I often quite like nightmares. If I'm being chased by monsters and everything, I wake up and think, oh man, that was awesome. But this dream absolutely terrified me. It was a man with half a face. Like, he has this kind of porcelain mask over the lower half of his face. And when I realized I needed a villain for this book, I just realized he was perfect. But it wasn't until book one, Cradle of All Worlds, had actually gone to my publisher and gone to print that I realized how connected Roth was to the cancer that killed my dad. Mm. I was walking down the street and I just stopped, and it just hit me. It sounds so obvious, but my dad died from a very rare form of cancer. It was actually in the lower trigeminal nerve on his face, and it kind of ate away, the cancer ate away my dad's jaw, and my villain is missing his jaw. It sounds so obvious, and his presence, Roth, is actually destroying the manor. He gives off this air of, this fug of kind of devastation. Mm. He's literally eating away at the manor the way the cancer does. So that was just, I called up my friend and said, I can't believe it, and told her what I'd realized. And she just said, Jem, I know. I knew as soon as I read it. She was kind of waiting for me to work it out myself. And as when you're writing a big adventure like this, the whole thing is you always want to make your hero and your villain the kind of a unity of opposites. Mm. Make them as they're complete opposites, but there is something connecting them as well. Realizing that Jane is looking down the barrel of losing her dad, Ross has, without a doubt, he has dealt with loss a lot himself. As you say, so has Elsa and Hickory. They've all come at it from different ways. It's very much about the corrupting power of grief and the passing on of pain to others, whether or not you choose to go down that path or not.
Yeah, that's a really powerful thing to think about. And I think, I mean, conversations are never separate and books are never separate from the time they're written in. But as you were talking there, it gave me pause about, I think, the way a lot of people are probably feeling right now. I think there's probably a lot of uncertainty for people, and people are maybe telling themselves worst-case scenarios where loss is very front of mind. And, I mean, we're seeing this. We're seeing this play out in some of us, in front of us as we visit stores and the like. Loss, or the idea of loss, is actually bringing out some really awful sides of people's characters, and for others it's bringing out the best. And I mean, a little conversation like ours is maybe not going to inspire someone in that moment, but I mean, it gives me pause to think about it. Sorry, that just sort of came into my head as you were talking there.
I think you're absolutely right. It just speaks to the power of art in all its forms, as you said earlier, just throughout difficult times like this, the power to have stories in any form to kind of tap into what we're feeling. I'm incredibly honoured to be a part of that and belong to that community.
So, look, I am speaking with Jeremy Lachlan. We are discussing The Key of All Souls. It is the second book in the Jane Doe Chronicles. I highly recommend, if you are finding yourself with extra time to read and you have other people in your life who like a kick-ass read, a lot of adventure, some great, great banter, to check out the Jane Doe Chronicles. Jeremy, thanks so much for coming on Final Draft, even from a distance.
Thank you so much, mate. It was wonderful.
To SER wishes to acknowledge the custodians of the land from which we broadcast, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation and the Wadumatagal clan of the Darug Nation, and their elders past, present and emerging. We acknowledge and respect their continuing culture and the contribution they make to the life of this city and this region.
You are tuned in to 2SER 107.3. Now, this is Final Draft, and my name is Andrew Popel. The impact of coronavirus, as well as recommendations for social distancing to minimise the virus's spread, has the potential to hit the small business sector hard. If you love books, then your local independent bookstore is a mecca for discovering the latest and greatest writing from Australia and around the world. I'm joined by Emma. She's a bookseller at Better Read Than Dead in Newtown. Emma, look, thank you so much for joining me here.
Thank you for having me.
Now, Better Read Than Dead, you're located in the heart of Sydney's Newtown, King Street. It's usually a bustling hub of retail and entertainment. Has that street activity changed recently?
Yeah, Andrew, we've noticed a considerable drop in foot traffic just coming up the main hub of King Street next to the Dendy Cinema and with the church over the road. So, yeah, we've definitely noticed a drop in people wandering in, particularly during the day with the universities also now transitioning to online classes. So, yeah, we are observing the impact of the virus, and obviously people's choice to self-isolate is completely rational. So we're also just trying to do our best around the fallen foot traffic.
Have you seen an impact in sales so far?
We have, yeah. We've obviously seen a bit of a drop, but we've managed to sort of mitigate that with introducing free shipping for web orders. We have been taking orders over the phone, people giving us their credit card details sort of at a distance, and we are working around. We're currently trying to create curated content so people can buy directly through our Instagram site and Facebook. But it's all due to the willingness of people in the inner west, particularly, to gather around their local businesses. We've seen so much solidarity between the local businesses of Newtown, the restaurants, the stores, the bars, trying to lift each other up during this very difficult time.
Yeah, solidarity is so important at this time where we are feeling more isolated. I know books and stories, they're really important to people. And I know booksellers are passionate about getting the right book into a reader's hands.
Yeah.
But then it's very confronting, just everything in the world at the moment. What's the feeling like at Better Read amongst the team?
It's been one of sort of, I guess, it sort of comes in waves in terms of how we're responding to the crisis. I mean, obviously with our events being cut back, we have sort of the top level of our store just seems quite quiet now, which usually on weekday nights and also on Fridays and on the weekends we see people coming from out of town. So we are noticing that our audience is kind of being cut back to locals, the people that are always coming in to support us and buy a book. And we do miss when people come to Newtown for a night out or, you know, a glass of wine or something, and they drop by and say, I've never seen this store before, or I've seen you online. So, yeah, we are missing those sort of interactions with people that are not from the inner west. And as booksellers, we really value our close engagement and strong engagement with our customers, being able to talk, and also that we're both in the mood to recommend things and that we both have sort of free minds to discuss the art and the stories that we're enjoying. So this is weighing on us mentally.
Books and Publishing, industry journal online sort of portal, recently released a list of independent bookstores from around the country and the ways that they are trying to combat the downturn in sales, the infrequency of people walking through the door. Mm. Is Better Read making any changes to the way you do business to encourage book sales? What are you doing to prepare for the possibility that this is going to be a drawn out period that we're facing this isolation?
Yeah, so we have just started an offer of free shipping on all orders that are made online. Granted that the books are in the store and on the shelf, we can send it out to you wherever you are in Australia. That will definitely continue until the end of March, and we're very likely to extend it into April. We're also curating a kind of personality quiz online so that readers can tell us what they're looking for to read at this particular moment, and we can recommend virtually. So you can sit at home, do this quiz. What kind of books, what kind of mood are you in? Are you in for something light, something funny, something historical fiction oriented? And we will then give you a sort of curated experience of bookselling and then send it out to you for no extra cost. So we are trying to work with the virtual platforms that we already have, and a lot of people have been already showing us amazing support by using our website. So we are confident that despite this really uncertain time, that we have that base of book lovers that are going to really hold us up.
Emma is a bookseller at Better Read Than Dead on King Street in Sydney's Newtown, and she was just there detailing some of the creative ways that independent booksellers are trying to, you know, keep you reading in this time of social isolation and combating the coronavirus. It is just about time for me to say goodbye. My name is Andrew Popel, and the show you are listening to is Final Draft. It is all about books writing and literary culture every week on 2SER 107.3. I want to say a big thank you before I go to Jeremy Lachlan. Jeremy joined me via phone from the south coast of New South Wales to discuss the Jane Doe Chronicles. The Key of All Souls is the latest book, and it is such a good adventure. If you need just a little bit of an escape from the everyday, I thoroughly recommend reading it. Also, Emma from Better Read Than Dead, who joined me to chat about some of the ways you can actually access the books that you love to support Australian authors and to support local businesses, your local bookshop. I want to keep doing that. Final Draft is so hugely important in my life, and I like to think that by sharing these books with you, it offers something to you too. And at the moment, this is a time I feel like we really need to come together, even if it's from a distance. You can check out Final Draft through 2SER. We also have the Final Draft Great Conversations podcast. It is free and a chance to listen to the authors that you love. There's nearly 100 episodes out there. So if you have time on your hands and you want something to listen to, can I recommend? And if you like the sound of any of the books, find out your local bookseller, your local independent bookstore, order it from them, and you get this kind of triple whammy of supporting Australian arts and Australian businesses and yourself. My name is Andrew Popel. I will be back next week from wherever I have to record with more episodes of Final Draft. stay tuned to 2SER. We will be keeping you updated with news. We will be bringing you plenty of music and as many stories as we can during this time of isolation, where it's so important for us to find ways to stay together. Until next week.